Monster Man, Episode 174, Dao to Demi-Lich.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are taking a look at three monsters from the D chapter of the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual 2 from 1983. And these are not daemons. I know, it hardly seems possible. But don't you worry, we'll be getting into broader categories of monsters before you know it. Today, it's a bit of a grab-back assortment. Before we go on to look at the monsters, though, I want to take a look at some comments I received about the Goblins episode. Listener Roberto loves goblins, and he said, "My favorite goblins have to be the Pathfinder ones. They're bumbling, annoying pyromaniacs who hate horses and riding, because reading steals your soul, wield rusty blades and ride their versions of dogs, which are hairless and with a rat tail. It really captures the pest aspect of the race, and they became the official mascot of Pathfinder to the point that they give them their own spin-off comic book series. Gross and petty things goblins can do in a campaign include posting those Facebook minion memes. You know which ones." And I was very pleased by listener John Hancock's characterization of goblins with the question, "How many six-year-olds could you take in a fight?" Okay, now we've given them all pixie sticks and Dr. Pepper and armed them with rusty knives. Now how many? And I think that there is something in the idea that goblins have the cruelty of children. I've spoken before about the idea that fairy tales are tied to both adults' perception of children and children's perception of adults. And so the idea of mischief and shortness, and those both are qualities that children have. Although the question, how many six-year-olds could you take in a fight, is really uncomfortable. Like, I don't like that thought. Maybe, you know, as an educator, I don't know that I like that thought. But I can see how it's a frightening question, like, because I don't think the answer is that many, really. Not if they're persistent. Okay, let's look at the monsters for today's episode. For starters, we got the Dao. The Dao is another type of djinn. The Dao is basically a genie, but it is associated with the element of earth rather than fire. Djinn typically are made of smokeless fire or subtle fire. And this one is more earthy. It doesn't seem to correspond, you know, most of the other, so if you look at the other djinn type monsters that are in Dungeons and Dragons, you got the djinn themselves, obviously, Marids, Ifrits, and Jann. And those are all terms that are actually used for djinn in Arabic or Persian sources. And that's not the case here. A Dao, I think, is something new. I don't know where the name comes from. And one of the other words that's often used to describe djinn that doesn't have a corresponding djinn type of monster is shaitan. So some sources argue that the Dao is basically meant to correspond to that idea of the shaitan. But I don't think that, I mean, as I said in the djinn special episode, I don't think that you can say that those terms are ever really used consistently to establish a hierarchy of creatures. But different people give different accounts of what's the difference between a djinn and a jann and a marid and an ifrit. And in many cases, the multiple different terms are used for the same being. So I'm not too convinced by that interpretation. Anyway, it's fine. It's a genie with some different powers, and it's maybe a bit more aggressively evil. I like the idea that they are ruled by a Khan, a Dao Khan surrounded by his court of hetmen. That's a pretty fun idea. Next, we got the Death, Crimson. This is an undead monster, sort of a cross between a vampire and a ghost. And more than anything else, it reminded me of the monster from the Robert Bloch short story, The Shambler from the Stars. It's a 1935 story that kicked off a series of sequels. It's a story about a character who's clearly meant to be H.P. Lovecraft being eaten by an extraterrestrial monster. And H.P. Lovecraft responded with the story, The Haunter of the Dark, in which a character who's obviously Robert Bloch is killed by a monster. And then Bloch, in turn, responded with The Shadow from the Steeple, in which Lovecraft himself is a character, and so is Robert Bloch. Well, Robert Bloch is kind of mentioned anyway, and a character who Bloch said was meant to be Fritz Leiber is killed by a monster. So it's all a bit confusing, but the point is that it is a misty, translucent monster, and it's so immaterial that it's very hard to hurt. It requires +2 or better weapons, it's hard to see, etc., etc. But as it feeds on people and sucks out their blood,
the blood starts to color it in. You know, it kind of goes into this mist and lends it this crimson coloration that makes it easier to see. And also, as the physical blood enters its body, it becomes more material and gets easier to hit. Its armor class gets worse, and you now only need plus one or better magic weapons to hit it. So I think that that's a really fun gimmick, right? The ideal time for you to win a fight against the Death, Crimson is once it has fed on one of your friends, but you've got a very limited amount of time. This only lasts for 6 turns after it's feeding. It also gets slower, presumably because it's no longer able to just, like, flit through obstacles like a mist. I think that's a really fun idea, and it's a really good kind of one gimmick monster, but you definitely see how it would, like, haunt a certain place, and once it had killed someone and more than 6 rounds had passed, it would just sort of vanish. So you would find exsanguinated bodies and be like, uh-oh, there are vampires around here. It wouldn't be absolutely true. So definitely, I have not used the Crimson Death in the past, but actually I think I'm quite likely to now. It's got a good bit. Finally, we have the Demi-Lich. The Demi-Lich is probably one of the most iconic monsters of Dungeons & Dragons, particularly given the recent release of the 5th edition supplement Tomb of Annihilation, which, of course, is based on the old Tomb of Horrors, which had a Demi-Lich in it. And, you know, being in Tomb of Horrors means that you're a monster that just missed being in the Monster Manual, since Tomb of Horrors is only shortly after it. So Demi-Liches have been around for a long time, and they're associated with one of D&D's most famous dungeons. And in keeping with the theme of the Tomb of Horrors, which is not a dungeon about having fights, but really a dungeon about solving puzzles, the Demi-Lich is quite a puzzly monster. I mean, certainly it's dangerous, and certainly, you know, you need to be pretty powerful to defeat it, but it's got a lot of weird gimmicks. It follows kind of a strange pattern of attacks. Different things affect it in different ways, and you have to kind of, like, you can see how there would be a lot of experimentation and trial and error in trying to fight a Demi-Lich, which would be appropriate for someone who had just come through doing a puzzle dungeon. I've never played Tomb of Horrors, so I can't actually tell you how it ends. But here, a Demi-Lich fight is basically kind of a fight stroke puzzle. There are some strange things in this description that make it not very clear. So the Demi-Lich has lots of different special abilities and kind of deploys them in sequence. So it begins appearing in this kind of shape made of dust, and the dust form has the powers of a wraith, but not the full powers of the Demi-Lich. It has to gain energy in order to become its full self, and it actually gains energy from being hit and being targeted by spells. It absorbs the kinetic or magical energy of attacks against it. Now, this is not the skull that actually makes up the Demi-Lich. This is just a thing that it has formed out of the dust in its environment. So then it says, if any creature is so foolish as to touch the skull of a Demi-Lich, a terrible thing occurs. In addition to the possible wraith or ghost manifestation, a new attack begins. At the touch, the skull rises into the air. A Demi-Lich can sense which member of a party is the most powerful, and it will usually select a member of the magic user class over a fighter over a cleric over a thief. The skull will then give off a howling sound equal to a death ray for a 20-foot radius. All creatures in the radius affected by this howl must save versus spell or be permanently slain and forever dead, which is what permanently slain means. On the next round, a new attack will take place. Each Demi-Lich has 5 to 8 gems set. So, slow up. What's all that stuff about selecting targets? It says, you know, the Demi-Lich knows who's the most powerful, and also, it fires off an area attack ability that hits everybody. So who cares? Then, in the next paragraph, there's a bit about how it runs, you know, the soul of the, it drains the life force from one of the intruders. The soul of the strongest will be drawn instantly from his or her body and trapped. So, like, that information is not presented near the information that would be useful to combine it with. This is obviously a minor quibble, but I often praise the Monster Manual for its habit of putting all the information that you need to run the monster in the same place. Unlike some later editions, which counted on you to know a lot of rules and apply them to the shorter monster description, this one just puts all the mechanical information that you need in the monster's entry, apart from spells as a rule. But then it presents that information in a way that's not accessible or easy to understand, which is frustrating. Obviously, if you just read longer, you'll get it, but it doesn't feel like it's well organized. There are a couple of entries like this in this book that really feel like they could have used an editor, and I don't know if they were rushed or what. Anyway, the Demi-Lich is fine. It's a classic, and I like all of its individual gimmicks. I don't know how it justifies being such a multi-gimmick monster other than that it exists kind of in a gimmick dungeon. But, you know, whatever, it's fine. And they certainly, like, they look cool, and by this point they are classic, and people sort of expect them in D&D, and
you know, I think they work well in that respect. Okay, in our next episode, we're going to be talking about Demodans, inhabitants of the Plain of Tartarus. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.